Welcome, everybody. Chuck Bonanno, Julie Hayden. This is the Chuck and Julie Show, The Truth Straight Up. And we're brought to you by Colorado Citizen Press, Julie.
Yeah, ColoradoCitizenPress.com. Great website. It's Colorado's conservative voice, one of the websites we check every morning. I check it every morning, every night. They give you a real clear look and a grassroots look at what's going on at the state legislature and issues affecting Colorado. They did, in fact, earlier this week, they had a poll on asking about, you know, do they think Polis is handling things right or wrong, or is he kind of pushing what they call the socialist agenda? A lot of stuff to talk about today. We're hoping to get a minority leader Patrick Neville on. As we all know, he's a little busy right now, but we've got him there. Casper Stockham was a candidate. Okay. Well, okay. All right. Well, many people have already heard it. But it'll be a surprise. Okay. So Casper Stockham.
Just told you, but it'll be a surprise.
Casper Stockham would be coming up with a surprise. And then also, we're touching base with one of our favorites, Jeff Allen. He's the COO of the Greater Glendale Chamber of Commerce. And they're doing a good job on their website, putting information out to help businesses, letting people know, hey, here are the businesses that are still open. Here are the businesses, restaurants that are doing takeout. And I want to talk to him about just how this is impacting businesses.
Yeah, not positively, I guess.
No. I mean, a couple ways to
listen. You may have noticed that brilliant as I am, I may not have sold the airplane stocks or the hotel stocks. I didn't get a pre-briefing like a lot of the U.S. senators did. And of course, Burr cashed in for $1.5 million, and Kelly Loeffler, whose husband owns the New York Stock Exchange, cashed in, and Dianne Feinstein cashed in. But that's okay. They're the government. But I got my hair cut yesterday, which was brilliant because the governor late yesterday decided there weren't enough small businesses he to destroy. So he got barber shops. He got the massage parlors, and of course the tattoo parlors, which have all those Harley people, and they often vote Republican.
There
so he hit them all. Not the internet, of course. Not any businesses he owns. And of course, he traded early because his friends in Washington undoubtedly told him what to
May
do.
May I interrupt this rant? Interrupt this rant briefly.
All right.
We could go back to it. Just say, hey, Patrick Neville, for our producers back there at BBS. Oh, they got it. I was going to say Patrick is ready to come on the phone. So that's, we can continue the rant unless Patrick wants to join
Patrick loves my rants. He just, God, can't Chuck talk more about gaming in Central City and bookmakers.
He
loves that
stuff.
He loves that stuff.
The Weekly Minority Report with Colorado Minority Leader Patrick Neville. Hey, Patrick, welcome. Welcome once again to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So we interrupted Chuck's rant to bring you on, which we'll get back to the rant, I'm sure. I guess bring us up to speed on what, if anything, you guys are involved in up at the state capitol, latest dealing with coronaviruses. And then we got a slew of other questions for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot going on. The biggest thing we're trying to do is find ways where we can reduce red tape to aid early response, much like the president has done. And to his credit, Polis has done some of these things too. So things like, I know the president like actually allowed the FDA to authorize testing because CDC was moving so slowly.
Right.
So he authorized the FDA to authorize private vendors to do testing, which I think is good. But in Colorado, to be quite frank, we might be beyond the testing phase.
Okay.
Now we're into the mitigation phase. So now we're looking at other things they can do to release the red tape for, like, we've got like a lot of different oxygen suppliers, right, throughout the state, and some are medically approved and some are not. But typically it's the same thing. So if we can get rid of the red tape on people that are supplying oxygen to, you know, a lot of people do it to like auto parts stores, right?
Right.
Or auto repair shops for oxygen and acetylene. If we can actually allow them to deliver in home to people
who
might
it.
Have coronavirus symptoms, we should be doing that. Things like actually lifting regulations on basically like your veterinarians that are out there have similar products to your hospitals. They're just classified slightly different.
Veterinarians
want to actually give up some of their supplies
right
to the hospitals. We should allow for that.
Okay.
So just trying to think of things like that. I mean, there's lots of different things like that we need to be thinking about. And again, the government's not going to be the solution here. It's going to be the private industry. So
they're going to be the problem. They're not going to be the solution. They're going to be the problem. Right now, what everybody said, we want to help small businesses. Big businesses, they get bailouts. Small businesses get loans that you have to personally guarantee. Oh, we'll make some more loans available to you that you'll have to personally guarantee. So if you hadn't previously had to personally guarantee, we'll take you down that way. I mean, maybe I'm the only one, but just the anger at the government and while they're wrecking the state, and they are wrecking the state, there is no, you can take a pen out and you can close down businesses. You cannot take a pen out and revive them. Depressions come fast. Whether it was in 2008 or 1929, recovery goes very slowly. Polis is killing the state, killing it. And just look at the unemployment claims. If there's a steeper curve than a number of cases, it's the unemployment claims which are going out of the roof. And there'll be no just magic pens. There's no deficit spending in the state. Is one government worker going to lose one penny, whether it's state, local, or federal? And the answer is no. All the rest of us are going to get slaughtered. That's what's going to be the result of Polis's actions.
Let Patrick respond.
But, just my opinion. I may be wrong. I'm not always – well, yes. Well, no, I'm not always right.
I mean, yeah, there's – I think at the end of the day, the bigger story is going to be the economic impacts rather than the health impacts. And I say this as someone who's actually very susceptible to this virus. But we're trying to work in private sector ways how we can solve this. So trying to do this drive that we're going to try to do on Sunday, it's probably going to be noon to four. We're still working on those details, trying to get this hospital, those equipment. Okay. Trying to figure out ways to reduce the red tape so that we can actually empower the private citizen to do more. Okay. To solve this problem, because like you said, Chuck, and I agree with you, government is the problem. Government certainly isn't going to solve it. If you look at the way we did testing nationwide, there's a problem with CDC, and then President Trump actually gave some more authority to the state to do individual testing through the state. I think there were some major problems with that, but I will take a look more in detail on that later after we actually get beyond what we're facing now. But I do think there were some major issues with how state proceeded with their testing. And now we actually have private testing available. The problem is we didn't engage the private sector early enough in this situation.
Right.
And now we're beyond the testing phase. And now we're doing this whole, let's shut down the whole entire state. And that's just not, we can't do this.
I have a question. So one of the things that Polis, I have two questions about this, because I'm hoping you can keep an eye on these things for us, because we're going to try. One is, I know that Polis launched the group, the private sector, this group that's going to help private.
To help artists.
Let me ask a question. To help businesses afterwards, right? But I noticed that people on it, it's Federico Pena, right? It's the level three CEO. It's some guy who was in charge of the arts and stuff. I did not see one small chamber of commerce guy. I mean, Patrick, is he gonna, I know you will, but I mean, is Polis gonna listen to anyone actually who's in a small business, or are they just gonna listen to level three guys and Mayor Federico Pena, who never ran a business in his whole life?
Well, I don't know who he's gonna listen to. He's listening to me on some of the ideas I've had on just overall cutting red tape, to his credit. But I don't know who he's going to listen to, as we fast forward in the future. I will say this, it's kind of nice because a lot of times I'll text his, being very military guy myself, I will text his departments directly and say, here's what we need to do. And they just ignore me and go, oh, that's just the minority leader. We don't care about him. And then if I don't hear back from him 24 hours later, I will text Governor Polis. And if he agrees with me, there's action, 2 hours later.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, that sense of it, I do appreciate him. He's kind of got that very, it's almost like a Trump mentality.
Okay.
So even though those two probably don't agree on anything policy-wise. but with that, it's actually kind of nice to have that ability to
do that. Well, here's another thing I want you to keep in mind.
We have our own little Colorado deep state, right?
Right, yeah.
Getting in the way of this stuff. Even our own little drive that we're trying to do, just getting the hospitals the PPE that they require. And it's like, hey, what kind of PPE do you guys need? And then we get the list and we give it to CDPHE, and then CDPHE is like, well, that's different from our list. I don't care what your list is, CDPHE.
Yeah. Here's what we need. Well, let me kind of going along with that. Here's another thing I'd like you to keep an eye on. I know that Polis has set up this major relief fund, right? Which, by the way, is being, so people are supposed to call it or can go and donate that. Well, number one, it's being managed by the Mile High United Way. I just checked this out. The CEO of the Mile High United Way made in 2018, $380,000. Chuck and I did a lot with this, with the Aurora Theater shooting, where there was this big fund that came up, and the money went to all of Hickenlooper's friends. Not a dime of it until people started shouting was going to actual people, right? It was going to like counselors and therapists and things like that because it's
political consultants.
Political consultants. So can you keep an eye on that too and make sure that this fund, that it actually goes, oh, I don't know, call me crazy. The Small Business Relief Fund goes to small businesses, not to, you know, consultant groups that work for Polis or like you said, the Colorado deep state, who are going to tell these small businesses that they have to come see them so they can give them advice on how to get their business back.
There are two groups in Colorado that do a great job of following the old maxim, never let a crisis go to waste. One is Democrats and two is the Colorado Republican establishment. They've just put out a whole series of emergency bylaws. And from everybody I talk to in the grassroots, they are emergency, let's help the establishment destroy the grassroots bylaws. Let's give all the power to the head of the Colorado Republican Party, Ken Buck, and make sure he can do whatever he wants to anybody else.
Okay, I'm going to cut off you there because that's just simply not true.
It is. Well, we'll bring in some people who think it's true.
Let me explain it. Like, if without 1359, we literally don't have the ability to do assemblies right now.
I got that.
And if the establishment wanted anything, the establishment wants no assemblies. They would love for every candidate to have a petition on and hire their favorite consultant to gather those petition signatures and never have an assembly ever again, because that's where the grassroots truly organizes, is at the assemblies, starting at the county level, moving all the way up to the state. And so we actually pushed forward House Bill 1359 to make sure that we could continue these assemblies, and that's all it did. And all these bylaws expire in December. So it's not
right,
like they
well, explain one
will
to
be
me.
Put
I don't
in place
have it.
Permanently, but let me be very clear. The establishment would love for us to have done nothing.
Well, I'm sure that's true. But what about the emergency bylaw that Ken Buck can take out any delegate, alternative delegate, and refuse to have him be able to participate in anything? Whose idea was that?
That's not a bylaw the way you're saying it.
Okay.
And well, I had it read to me. I had it read to me.
They actually have to.
All right. Well, I know some of the people. So Ben. When you know, a little later on, Ben, I'll have you read, if you could, the emergency bylaw that provides the chairman with that capacity.
Okay, and let me, though, if I may.
But the bylaw, hang on, let me explain this very clearly, because the bylaw only allows for Ken to do that if and only if the assembly has tried to meet through either electronic means, email means, mail means, things like that, and actually made a vote. And if they can prove the assembly has not been able to do that, then it goes to the assembly's vacancy committee.
Okay.
And only after that, if after the vacancy committee, they still haven't approved anything, then the chairman gets to pick it.
Okay.
So there's a very high level for the chairman to get to pick the person. But quite frankly, that's so that Jared Polis doesn't pick the candidate.
So, all right, we can pursue all of that later. Because, and thank you, Patrick, for saying that. Because I think in this day and age, there is a lot of stuff going on around out there, and it's important.
Well, there's a lot of anger. Let me finish this. There's a lot of anger at Polis, and I don't know if you know. You say, and if you say it, I believe it, that he's more like Trump, and I think Trump has done an unbelievable job, quite frankly. But there's a lot of anger, especially small business. And that's us, right? Small businesses that he's destroying. We're not happy about it. We really aren't. And we noticed that last year, already this year, 1,000 deaths from regular flu. 1,000 deaths.
No, just last week.
Last week. Oh, I'm sorry. 1,000 deaths from regular flu. But it didn't give them a crisis and an opportunity. So there's a lot of built-up anger among small businesses, and it's coming out.
And let me, Patrick, then throw you a softball there, because I know I can hear even. Well, no, he deserves it. He deserves a softball. You can hear he's just this guy. I don't think his voicemail is full. He's not sleeping. I'm sure he's. What do you, I guess, you know, I'm going to give you, just like I said, just a softball. What do you want to say to people? What do you want to reassure people about what you're doing, what you're keeping an eye on, you know, what people need to know?
Well, like I said, I think the most immediate thing that we actually wanted to do was actually pass that bill so the assemblies can still move forward, and we did that. I was not happy with the fact that we actually had to go beyond the state central committee meeting. I made that very clear to Ken Buck yesterday, And then today we passed those emergency bylaws today through the executive committee. But I get it. It's because of Polis's executive orders, which I'm not happy with either. I actually totally support what Ken Buck said. We can't close every restaurant down for 30 days. We can't close every small business down for this long of a time. So when it comes to this overall situation we're facing, I do think at some point we need to get the economy back up and running. We need to get private industry back up and running. And we're not going to ever solve any of the shortages and all the problems we're facing unless we look at private industry. And when it comes directly to the situation that we're looking at with COVID-19 or Chinese virus or whatever you want to call it, look at the Democrat policies they put they put forward, and they were about to pass through in this legislature. And then we had this pause. But if you look at all the policies they had, whether it was public option, whether it was killing the health Medicare industries, whether it was adding all these different crazy health insurance coverages to people's policies, attacking the pharmaceutical industry with these erroneous reports, everything they did, single-use plastics. I mean, look at their entire agenda. If had that already passed, we would be in so much worse of a situation right now than we are now.
Can you guys do something? Can you undo the minimum wage requirements? I know some of that is city bills. Can you undo the city's single bag use, which is ridiculous? I mean, can you undo any of the stuff that they've done, let alone stop like the paid family leave and Polis Care?
Well, I mean, Polis Care still has to go through. We still have no idea. So we're in break in the legislature until the 30th. So after the 30th, we can reconvene. I don't know what will happen. My guess is that we'll probably go back into recess for a certain amount of time because I don't think things are going to be too much better. So there's some things we can stop. A lot of that local stuff, no, I don't think we can stop it. There's really nothing we can do while we're out of session. It's really up to Polis. So if he wants to relax some of his regulations, and most of this is regulatory burden, I'm not going to just blame totally Polis on this because a lot of this was Hickenlooper and Ritter before him. Put in all these ridiculous regulations. But if he wants to roll to some of this stuff back, then we're going to partner with him on that and do it. Like if he wants to cut red tape on things like occupational licensing to get more nurses and doctors in the fight, cool. I'm going to be with him.
Well, yeah, I'm afraid that the rest of the Democrats may not be.
Well, but maybe that might be a silver lining, right? I mean, it might have stopped some of these extreme progressive things, maybe stopped it in the tracks. Or do you think they're going to care, the Democrats?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think so. To be honest with you, when we were pushing to recess session, and I'm glad we did, because it sounds like we were probably all exposed because Daphne Michelson Janae, state rep, was actually exposed to COVID and actually has it. So I'm glad we did, but there was a lot of pushback. I mean, even up until that we had the vote to move this out of committee, I think that was a Wednesday night that we pushed that. And there was so much pushback even on that vote alone that, oh no, we're kind of just overreacting. Right. Legislature shouldn't shut down. And there was quite frankly a lot of pushback from the governor's office.
Yeah.
And I think they were kind of hoping like that, oh, well, we have this giant agenda. We don't want that to go away.
Right.
What happens if they recess? And to some of their credits, like Alec Garnett and Casey Becker, at least in the House, were forefront with me. And they're like, yeah, we want to adjourn. We think it's the right thing to do. And we'll figure out whether we can add days later on. But at this point, we think the right call is to actually adjourn. And given the symptoms that came out and the news report that came out with Representative Michelson and Janam, I'm glad we did.
Exactly.
Well, it's going to be almost impossible, isn't it, to pass a bill that has a significant fiscal note to it?
Oh, yeah, that's another point. I mean, the rest of our time, I think, is going to be all about budget. The forecast came out, and I think I was predicting at least a $500 million hit. Now it looks like it's $800 million.
And who knows, really?
That's just the beginning.
Yeah, that's this week.
My prediction was like way big. Like that was way small.
Right.
And as more data comes through and you see the economy effects more and more, like, yeah, that's going to be one of those things that every bill that we just passed through, we got to reevaluate and look at every dime, every dollar that we spent and do it wisely. And then on top of this, I guarantee you with the unemployment rate, the way it's going, our Medicaid cases is going to increase. Yep. And that's going to eat up even more of our budget because we went all in for Medicaid expansion. And so, Medicare expansion. And so,
Medicaid expansion.
It's going to be even tighter and tighter.
Yeah.
Well, that's all good news, Pandra. No, let me, what can people, let me, again, because we appreciate, Chuck, the debate, which is good. We appreciate your time here. Can people?
I get a little excited.
Well, you should. I mean, that's good. But what can people, what can folks listening do for you, do to help you guys or help all of us?
First thing is go to takebackco.org, takebackco.org. Sign up there. That's where we'll get people involved. Look, at this point, we are dealing with a bit of a crisis. I do think it's being a bit overblown. And I kind of agree with Chuck and Ken Buck and those folks. I think right. We should be keeping businesses open. But we do have a crisis on our hands. So if you go up there and sign up there, it's not going to be just all political. We're also going to take opportunities to help and plug you in. Things like I mentioned, if we do have a drive, that you might have a box of gloves in your garage.
Right.
You know, of medical gloves or just latex gloves at this point. They don't need medical grade gloves. And
right.
You can come to this drive and turn them in. That'd be great.
Okay. All right, Patrick, thank you. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for your time.
You sound stressed, so I hope you can relax a little bit this weekend. And anything we can do to help, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Patrick. So check out that website. I also want to say the folks at Colorado Citizen Press do a really good ColoradoCitizenPress.com do a really good job also with that in terms of keeping up what's going on there. I'm going to bring us up full here too. We were hoping to get Casper Stockham in. He has not called in.
Ben first and then go to our next guest.
Let me give the phone number that people want to call. 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. I want to let folks know you can listen to the show via chuckandjulie.com. If you go there, though, to listen live, we don't come up. It doesn't come up till right at 3 o'clock.
Right.
But you can also go to chuckandjulie.com and get any of the podcasts, the archive podcasts, and you just go to podcasts. Go figure, and you click on that.
Very tricky.
And if you go, and if you want to join via Zoom, the chuckandjulie.com will take you to the BBS site, and there's a little link you can clip on there as well.
Well, there's Ben. So Ben, you heard with the
talking about the assembly rules.
That really the rule giving Ken Buck, you know, unlimited authority was really just a last gap. No. Everything else in the world blows up. I think that's the right interpretation of what he was saying.
Well, it's setting a lot of rules that the Democrats are controlling, you know, from the House. I mean, they control all three branches of the state government. Hmm. And so what we've done now is allow them to set all these rules. Our state party leaders seem to have taken advantage of this. And it seems like they're usurping the rights of many of the county party leaders. And that's where the real power lies, leastwise in my opinion. I'm not alone in that opinion that I think that maybe this is just something that they're trying to do. I mean, in these proposed bylaw changes that were adopted, I and others, Neil, myself, and many others, I think, also found that of the 17 bylaws, only two of them really made any sense because the rest of them really didn't concern themselves with the coronavirus outbreak. It just seemed like it was just a power struggle to pull everything up to the top.
A crisis go to waste, in other words.
Exactly. I think what Patrick was talking about was the bylaw number 12, and that's where the chairman can change those things with only a notice of 3 days. Hmm. You know, so that's all he has to give out. And the other thing that was concerning about it was the bylaw number 14, and that's where the chairman, state party chairman, can bar alternates from even attending the state assembly. So that's
I can't even attend it.
That's right.
Because I'm an alternate, so I can't even go. What are they going to like turn me away at the door like a bouncer or something?
If the chairman so decides that you cannot attend, and that's where, you know, as a county, we elect both delegates and alternates.
Well, yeah, because what if Chuck is sick or something, right?
That's right. So if the morning of that assembly or that convention, Chuck gets sick and he's barred you from attending, we have no way to have you represent us in our precinct here.
That seems
so. That's what's in 14. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. A lot of these things that were in these bylaw changes were just, they just raised red flags with me. And the only one I voted for was number 3 and number 6. And that was only two. That those two seemed to have some effect about the coronavirus. Or the coronavirus.
Okay. Well, Ben, let me ask you.
The other thing that I wanted to mention was that Patrick mentioned he listed out all these things that the Democrats were proposing to do that would have been detrimental to us as a state, right?
Right.
So why on earth would you allow this group who is proposing those destructive things to then pass, you know, to put on us all these other things that we have to accept now?
Yeah.
This party needs to learn to litigate and push back in the courts.
Well, what Patrick is saying, what they really want to do is kill all the assemblies, and this allows them not to kill the assemblies, and therefore it's a good thing.
But they've effectively done that, haven't they?
Yeah, they've already done it.
Hey, Ben, let me put you on hold for a second because we've got Barney calling in. Yeah. So we want to go to Barney. Let's go to Barney here on the phone. Hey, Barney, happy Friday.
Well, that's right. This is Party Friday. You can tell that by my mood.
Yeah,
Chuck. I'm a little worried about Chuck, Julie. He's getting a little cranky, and now that he can't hit.
I've been on a diet. That's
what
happens.
Yeah, here's the thing. Chuck has done a great job. You can't. One day, well, maybe at the end of the day, we'll have him do a modeling thing. Chuck's lost a bunch of weight, so
that always makes you cranky.
I can attest to the fact that he has been just a tad bit. Sometimes it's hard to tell from his ongoing, always cheerful, optimistic demeanor, but just a tad bit crankier, Barney.
Okay. Well. By the way, to Ben, sorry I butted in on your.
No, that's okay.
That's okay. He doesn't mind when you're one of your obnoxious, most obnoxious.
Not a problem. I enjoy listening to you, Barney.
Oh, come on. Don't suck up, Ben. We don't do that. Why in the hell did I call you guys?
I was going to ask you about that, Barney.
Yeah.
What your thoughts on
my India trip got canceled.
Oh, no.
You know, Trump came out and did his thing, and yeah, I know. I was damn sure going to get an Indian bride, but not anymore. So
no.
All right, we'll do it in the fall or something. But so what's going to happen? You know, you were talking to Patrick, but I'm just a little bit worried about the goons out there, you know, freaking out and breaking down doors because they don't have enough beer or cigarettes or whatever. You know, are they going to shut literally? How do you shut a state down? I don't know.
Well, they're doing it in California, they're doing it in Illinois, and they're doing it in New York, and doing it here. And what do they all have in common? You know, all
liberals.
Democratic legislatures and all Democratic governors. I mean,
today the president said he didn't think they would need to go to a national shutdown. I mean, here's the thing, they've shut down nail salons, for God's sakes. I mean, they've shut down everything. I don't know if they shut everything down.
Did you notice that they've closed down clubs? Bathhouses, though, on Colfax, up for business.
Oh,
everybody,
God.
Come in and have a good time there. Meet the governor.
The bathhouses. Great. Oh my God, not the bathhouses. God,
yeah, really. We don't want to do that.
Get out of shape. No, God, deep no. The gay population will rise up on that one.
Oh yeah.
Well, now we're gonna ban Barney.
I can't wait to help Casper. I love that guy.
Yes.
He's awesome. Yeah. He's a good guy. But anyway. Ben, take it easy. Chuck, take it easy. Julie, have a good weekend, and just let us know on Monday if we need to break out the AR-14s.
You know? All right. Which one? You're going to like this. My brother called me, and he said he bought an AR, whatever, 50, an AR and a shotgun.
Good
and he said the gun store, but his wife was a little concerned about that.
Well,
but
funny that your brother should do that, because the AR-14 doesn't exist. The M14 exists, which is full auto, but I'm sure your brother bought an AR-15.
15.
I hope
whatever.
He didn't buy a piece.
No,
of
he
crap.
Probably got an AR.
Yeah, he's my
he
brother.
He probably got a full automatic, knowing your brother.
Well, yeah. Hey, yeah. Hey, Joe Biden told us to.
Yeah.
That's right. There you go.
He says, "Barney, shotgun."
Shoot, yeah, there you go.
Wheels off the porch.
All right, Barney. Hey, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later. We have now. I think we have Jeff Allen. He is the no. That's Ben. If we can bring Jeff Allen up.
Jeff Allen looks a lot like Ben.
Ben, it's the guys at BBS. I mean, I don't know how to do that.
Can you hear me? good.
I mean, there he is. That guy looks like Jeff Allen. Yeah.
It wasn't worth the wait, was it?
This Zoom thing is fun. You know, I can tell our callers, just go to bbsradio.com. You can click on the link. Jeff wanted to bring you in. Jeff is a good friend and the COO of the Greater Glendale Chamber of Commerce. I got to say, you guys, I think, have been doing, because we belong to the Chamber of Commerce, have been doing a great job getting the word out on what kind of help is out there for businesses, what businesses are open, which ones are closed, which ones are doing takeout.
Yeah, which ones are open?
Yeah, well, there's some banks and things. Why don't you kind of explain what you what you guys are doing?
Well, it's that two-day rule, Chuck, where they have to be open every couple of days. And I talked to a couple of banks today, and they classify them as essential businesses. So that's correct. We do have a couple.
Luckily, this podcast has been notified we're essential.
It's essential, exactly. Julie, you've not been feeding them. Chuck, you look great. The bones Bonnywell. But a handful of restaurants are in a process of getting geared up for their takeout, their business. We heard from one of the restaurants the other day that difficulty for the close has to do with Mother's Day. They were telling me that the hopover date is after Mother's Day, just as it was before St. Patrick's Day. And some of the restaurants I'm talking with tell us that's a make or break.
Make or break for them.
It really is.
Right.
And you know, all of the things that we've been talking about this afternoon, the minimum wage and so forth, they're really in a tough spot.
What about the governor today said, and I don't know, maybe this is aimed more at breweries, but they were going to loosen the regulations and allow, which I think is a good idea, the restaurants to deliver alcohol as well as food. Is that going to help the restaurants, or is that one of those things that's just such a problem? I mean, what do you serve your cocktail? Here's your martini, you know? And
hope I think it's a nice enough idea, but I just think the logistics of it are a little difficult. You know, when we have a chamber event that's off-site, that's perhaps at a member's office, and there's no liquor license in place, it creates a different kind of insurance problem. So I think it's good in intention, but I think there's some logistical difficulty with it that will make it.
What do you hear? I know at the newspaper, you know, we hear from clients saying, "Oh my gosh, we don't know." What are businesses saying to you? Two-part question. Yeah. What are they worried about? And if you had the magic wand and could wave it, what would you do to help?
Well, the magic wand I would wave is be ready. The minute that these businesses go back into operation, let's not be shy about returning back to those businesses. One of the things that I believe that some of the businesses have told me a concern is the change in workforce. They're not so sure what their workforce is going to look like when they're ready to reopen. Have they found something else to do? You know, there are even some situations now where some of the small businesses, can they access some of the disaster money, some of the desperate money? Are they going to decide to stay with it? Or are they going to decide to take their losses and move into something that's a little more familiar to them? So not just to restaurants, but I think that we could see this in a lot of the various industries. Most of our members that I've talked with are able, though not highly desiring, to wait out a 30-day period. But if it gets into 60 or anything more than that, there's just not the ability to recover from that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, how long can they wait? Because I can see, I mean, okay, so you can, if you're not open for business, then you don't have expenses. I mean, you don't have to pay people,
right?
But you don't have income coming in, but you've still got stuff like leases, mortgage,
your
leases,
property taxes, the mayor, they've hiked
utility
your property
bills,
tax.
Utility bills, insurance, all of those things go on. And, there was an interesting article or an interesting email that had gone out today from one of the restaurant chains that was looking for ways to talk with legislators at the national level to moratorium on evictions, moratorium on utility bills, and you know, as you all know, these things aren't free, and so what we're going to have is, and while I support their hardship, these things aren't free, or they would have already been free. And so our economy just can't take this pummeling for, I think 30 days is brutal. I really do. And okay. I think
so the president is saying 15 days. And so we're kind of like 2 or 3 days into that. That's kind of the sense I get from talking to businesses too. Two weeks is they can do. A month is like, yikes. And more than a month, I mean, the ones I'm talking to are saying, I don't know, I can't survive then. Right.
Well, and that may be, and to tip my hand where I may lean politically, at least we've got somebody that's working with a sheet of paper that will say, okay, this doesn't work. We're going to try this. And he's willing to listen, and he's willing to help. And we finally have got somebody at some level of the political spectrum that understands business. He's had his own business. Well, exactly the case. Exactly the case. So he at least gets it.
Bloomberg is one shining spot, an otherwise disastrous debate thing, when he said, I think I'm the only one here who's ever opened a business, you know, looking at this huge row of, you know, people who have been.
Exactly. The others were specialists at closing businesses.
Let me ask you about this, too. It seems to me that when businesses go, for instance, I'm going to throw you for instance. I've got a friend who their business, they're involved in supplying produce and food to schools, right?
Yeah.
Which all of a sudden, poof, and one day went away. I mean, they're like, we've got semi-trucks of stuff we can't do anything with, right? But on the other hand, when it opens, it's not like, again, there's a switch they just flip on. I would imagine, like you said, all the people have been let go. I mean, what do businesses tell you in terms of what do they need to gear back up when that day comes? Because it will come.
I'm sorry, Chuck.
I just said we hope that day will come.
Exactly. I think the thing that we're trying to do and keep them engaged is that many of them are still in business right now. And this is one of the things I think has changed, is we're going to see a difference in the way people work. I think that we are going to find that people are going to be a little bit more efficient away from a brick and mortar, and they're going to be a little bit more efficient in how they conduct their day-to-day operations. You know, it started with the cell phone years ago. Used to be, you would not see anyone in a restaurant after 1 or 2 in the afternoon. Now they're in there all afternoon because they can conduct their business on their cell phone.
Okay, that's so
it.
So that may be what.
Well, let me ask one. What I love is, you know, they already passed $100 billion stimulus package, and now they've apparently agreed to another, you know, God knows how many billions. But what I love is that whether it's the airlines or any of these other ones, if you're a big guy, you get bailouts, right? I mean, they just shove you the money.
Yes.
If you're a small guy, hey, we want the SBA to be opening up and giving you loans. Well, if you've ever had an SBA loan, they require you to personally guarantee it.
And pay it back.
And so what they're doing is going to probably bankrupt these people because they, oh, well, I've got to borrow it now or my business closes. And they go, why did I ever guarantee that loan? I mean, on a national scale, there's talk about two different views. Big business, bailouts. Small businesses, crippling debt. I mean, that's how it works in this world.
You hit it right on the nose. We can all imagine 60 days down the road when we have to make an airline change, or we're going to have to pay a change fee to the same airline that we have bailed out.
Right.
The SBA really is not a resource for the small person, and when they do back it with their they have to back it with their home or something, they have to back it with a hard asset. Nothing wrong with that, but what I'm saying is exactly what you were getting at, Chuck, and that is that the SBA really does not care about the small person. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of small businesses in our chamber that qualify, but they employ hundreds of people, and that is a definition of their small business.
Right.
Not that small. Let me ask you this. What about the minimum wage? I would hope that, I mean, small businesses have been hollering about that. Denver had it. I mean, I would think, to me, it seems like they got to get rid of that. Now, people are going to say, and paid family leave, those kind of things that we're putting already burdens on. I mean, we at the paper have had some people say, hey, look, we've had to pull back our advertising because this minimum wage thing is going up and I got to make decisions. What do you think about those two things?
Well, plenty. Let's look at this right now. This might be paid family leave or paid medical leave.
Yes.
So let's suppose that any of the businesses, even any business. So now their income has stopped. They still have to continue the payroll burden of that person on leave. It's really no different than if that person had to go away on leave and there's not the production or the income produced by that person, but yet there's the outgo. Right. Most businesses who are solid businesses do have a plan and a way to take care of those people. Right. But when we get, and this is a little bit back to what we spoke about before, when you start to get politicians who have never ran a business dictating that or dictating minimum wage, all it does is it gets people laid off. And, our mayor who ran for governor often speaks about that Mike Dunphan. Exactly, that there really should not even be a minimum wage. But the government should not dictate what you sell your services to. And the free market always will decide what your services are worth.
Unfortunately, and I guess I don't agree with our esteemed mayor because, I had descendants who did work in labor, at age 12.
Yes.
And got paid nothing.
Right.
Yes, that was a wonderful thing for the robber barons. It wasn't so wonderful for the kiddies working 6 days a week, backbreaking week from age 12. So,
but you were free to go mow your own yards or do something else. You were free to choose and set the price.
Yes, that I agree with that part. Yeah, I agree with that part.
All right. Well, Jeff, listen, we've got our other guest has come up. So let me just find any final words. I mean, that I totally agree with what you said at the beginning, that we all need to be ready when this stops to get out there and support our small businesses, because we are all in this together.
Yes. It's miserable, but it's temporary. And let's just, when we're in the store, let's buy what we need.
And then some. That's my theory.
Exactly. And then when we get back to business as usual, let's go back and support the small business. They really need it. And they are, in fact, the people who employ people who are supporting your business.
Yeah.
It's a circular chain.
All right, sure, Jeff. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate
you coming on.
Had a great time. Thank you very much.
All right, Jeff Allen there with the Greater Glendale Chamber of Commerce. And again, I'd like to say they're doing a really good job of getting the
really
word out
excellent.
There. So to our BBS producers, I don't know how you work the magic buttons. If we could, I don't know, make Jeff smaller and make Casper Stockham there. If we could bring Casper Stockham up, that would be great. Because Casper, there we go. Look at the magic of producers.
He looks like Ben Nicholas. No.
So Casper, we've had you on before talking about your CD6 race. Big announcement today. What do you want folks to know?
Yes. After much thought and prayer and talking to folks and just thinking about this, we have made the decision to switch from the CD6 race to the CD7 race. This did not come as a whim. It's not something we just thought about today. We've actually been thinking about this for the past few weeks. I was all geared up to go to the assembly and have a tremendous assembly. But what happened was the coronavirus, right? Mm-hmm. So Elbert Gilley was going to come in town. I think I mentioned to you.
Right, we were going to have him on
the show. Mm-hmm. We had fundraisers set up. We had meet and greets. It was just going to be a great time. I purchased a lot of material to have at the assembly. It was just going to be a great time. And then the virus showed up that kind of squashed all that.
Right.
So then the CD7 folks reached out to me and said, hey, have you thought about CD7? And I said, no, I haven't.
I'm thinking
about CD6. But without resources, you guys know this, this is not anything new for anybody. Without having enough resources, you really can't run an effective race. So even though I would have gotten on the ballot for sure, I would have got 40% or more to get on the ballot, but that doesn't help me get to the primary and even further beyond that. So.
But we're happy because now we can vote for you because we live in CD7.
There you go.
So
there we go.
Let me kind of back you up and explain. So how does that work? There might be somebody saying, well, how can you just switch like that? What are the rules? How does that work?
Yeah. So at a federal level for the congressional seats, you do not have to live in the district to run, but you do have to live to serve. That's why I was able to run in Denver twice, even though I lived in CD6. I lived in Aurora. And they're going to call me a carpetbagger or whatever, but I'm looking forward to those discussions because 70%, guys, of my support has always come from JeffCo.
Yeah.
So even though I haven't run in JeffCo, the Tea Parties are in JeffCo, a lot of my supporters, people that couldn't vote for me, like you guys, still supported me and still endorsed me and stuff. So is actually almost like a coming home party, because all day long, there's a reason why I was late coming on the show today, because I've been fielding calls all day long from people saying, wow, I can actually vote for you. I've been supporting you forever, but now I can vote for you too. So,
well, here's another thing that I think is really good too, because Perlmutter is the Democrat candidate, and there was not a Republican candidate. And to me, I was dismayed, thinking this is a congressional race. It is too big to just let go to waste. Exactly. And so, I mean, I think, like you said, who knows what level of support you're going to have, but even at the very least, it's going to be like when you ran in Denver, it forces the Democrats, it forces Perlmutter to spend some time and some money here, right?
Yeah. It's going to be better than what happened in Denver, because I've already gotten the full support of the folks in City 7. In fact, they reached out to me. So what I did was
Who reached out to you? Joe Webb? Joe Webb? Did he reach out to you?
No, it wasn't Joe Webb. It was some other folks in City 7. But when they did that and we talked about it, I talked about this with my team and everybody else, and I decided, okay, well, let's have a discussion. So I reached out to Ken Buck. I reached out to Steve House. And both of those gentlemen thought it was a good idea. And I said, well, that's great, but
give
me
some
support.
Help. Exactly. Are they going to be there, do you think, for you then?
They said they will. So we'll see. Steve was much more willing to commit to time and resources. So we'll see. But I'm excited about the potential, because with their support and with the support of the folks in City 7, I think Perlmutter's in trouble. In fact, I think I have a really good shot, and I know this is a long shot, you know, for most people, but I think I have a really good shot of winning that race.
Well, you ought to get a lot of money from Steve House, because you saved him hundreds of thousands
yeah, really?
Of dollars.
Yeah.
At least cut me a $20,000 check, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Let me tell you, people from Steve House got to...
Oh, Ben is raising
$50,000. But I promise you, the people from the House campaign got to Ken Buck and the rest of them before you ever did.
Well, you know, though, here's the thing. Back to the actual talk. He's being cynical.
No, I'm not being cynical. That's absolutely true.
One of the things I think that's good, though, is Perlmutter didn't really want to run this last time, right? I mean, I think he was like, no, I'm going to run for governor because I'm sick of being in Congress.
I'm old and I'm tired.
I'm old and I'm tired to try to be in Congress. It's like, oh, I guess now the poll is going to be governor.
As long as I can make some inside stock deal, hotel stock.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's not full of fire and passion, right? I mean, you don't even ever hear of the guy doing anything.
Yeah, you know, he's a nice guy, but he's tired, and I think it's time for somebody to really, push some pressure on him to just move along. Just move along.
Just move along.
When did Ed become a nice guy? I must have missed that day.
You know, compared to most Democrats, I think he's a nice guy. I think he's old and tired, but I think he's a nice guy.
Okay. Let me then, so you're
right. He's got a good golf tournament, though.
Well, that's been canceled, though, now. So before it was Casper for Colorado, the website people needed to go to.
Yeah, you don't change that.
Yeah, that
you're
was
all set.
Brilliant. Yeah,
and you can get to 2, 3, 4, and 5. You have a sweep.
a couple more cycles, and I'll be through
there.
All the TDs.
You'll be a trivia. Who was the man who ran every district in the state of Colorado?
Everything stays the same. CasperForColorado.com. But I really need folks to step up, because part of the reason why I had to make this decision is I didn't have the financial support going forward in City 6. I had a lot of people, grassroots people, that were rooting me on from the sidelines, and that's great. However, at the end of the day, it comes down to votes and it comes down to money. And I had the votes, but I didn't have the money to really put forth a good.
I hate to tell you this, but raising money in the middle of the coronavirus is going to be highly challenging.
It's a lot of time between now and November, though. A lot of time between now and November.
Well, are you the only one? Is anybody else running in the Republican primary?
No, I believe I will be unchallenged. So it'll be. It'll be just me.
Just you?
All right. Well, we'll be voting for you. So we're happy about that. Casper, we'll let you go. I know your phone's probably ringing off the hook. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for that. And let's just stay in touch. We'll continue supporting you, okay?
Good job, Casper.
I'll come back. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
All right. Thank you to Casper Stockham there. You know, a lot of stuff, I wanted to go back and throw out some numbers on coronavirus and the virus. If you want to call in, 888-627-6008.
And we got Peg listening. And she just,
if she wants to talk to Peg, can do that. 888-627-6008. And if we could bring me and Chuck back, Chuck and I, Chuck back and up I. full to bring the guys I, at
bring
BBS.
Me up. No,
bring me up. There's just the Julie Hayden portion.
No, Chuck
of it.
And me.
That would be great. So I wanted to throw out some numbers with the coronavirus, because I think this is important to keep in mind. You know, the Gateway Pundit did a good job with this. So we've had in the nation 205 deaths so far from coronavirus. They pointed out that flu deaths in the nation just this past week, the regular seasonal flu, was up by 1,000, right? So I just go back to, again, this is my thing, that with the, let me see if I can bring this up. With the,
there we are.
The, and I don't know if that does it, that messes them up or not, but with the, I understand that to a certain extent, the horse is out of the barn, right? I mean, we've already done all this, but I just kind of wonder going forward, you know, hopefully the country does not allow itself to be, I don't know, captured by the hysterical media, which just wants to tank Trump no matter what they do. And I think I mean, everybody we talk to says small businesses, everybody is like, this is killing us.
This
we didn't
Armageddon.
Do this for the seasonal flu.
No.
Maybe it's more contagious, but you know,
well, can you,
there
can
might
you imagine,
have been other ways to do this.
Can you imagine destroying
the
somebody
economy.
Going in and saying, you know, I've got the dry cough, I've got a high fever, and congratulations, you do not have the coronavirus. And they go, oh, great. Bad news is you have the regular flu,
right.
And you're just as likely to die from that
and
as the coronavirus.
Well, not
so.
Just as likely, 10 times more likely with the current numbers. So there are 230 coronavirus deaths that have been confirmed in the United States so far, 23,000 flu deaths confirmed
so far.
And
we could care less. They, you know, oh, phew.
Yes.
Those 23,000. That included young people. That included kids,
well,
babies, and everything else. And, you know, the coronavirus gets baby boomers. So come on. I mean, it's baby boomers.
It's, you
we
know,
baby boomers need to be protected.
So the one thing I will say, though, I don't know if you guys saw, I made Chuck watch it. When Trump took on that, there was an NBC reporter.
Peter Alexander.
Yeah, the NBC reporter was raised and said, oh, Your Honor, you know, Your Honor, Mr. President, everybody's panicked and scared. What do you have to say to them?
Yeah, you're being so optimistic. Why don't you get more pessimistic?
Right.
You just ripped them
and
a
they,
new
first,
one.
And they, number one, if you watch it, they edited it fake. They made it seem like the president went straight to you're a terrible reporter.
Right,
the president
right,
simply
right.
said, you are scaring people unnecessarily. It is not what you're saying. Things are, we're doing what we can here. The numbers are not what you guys are putting them out to be. And then he came back and he was saying, you're a terrible reporter.
Yeah.
Well, the numbers, like we had Michael Tao explaining what they're doing, and this is the mainstream media is doing this. I think the CDC is not really doing this. I'll give them credit. And the World Health Organization, they were doing it before, but they're not now. They're taking the confirmed cases and the confirmed deaths, and they're comparing statistics for the coronavirus with the estimated cases and estimated deaths with the seasonal flu. When you look at the confirmed cases, because most people don't get tested for the seasonal flu, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just like here, they can't, I don't know what the big deal is. We don't have enough tests. It's like, hey, guess what? If you're sick, if you have flu-like symptoms, stay home. Right?
Or if you're an at-risk person, get the hospital.
If you're at the exactly.
And just because you don't have the coronavirus, I did not die of coronavirus.
No,
great, you died
right,
of regular
flu. Of seasonal flu.
Congratulations.
Exactly. It's just ridiculous. And when you actually compare the numbers, even the CDC is saying this now, the fatality rate is pretty similar and maybe even a little bit less.
Well, you know it's less. Here is why mathematics is the numerator and denominator and all that. But,
ooh.
But ooh, high math. Non-Euclidean geometry. As a practical matter, the people are dying are people over 55 that have complicated medical conditions. That is not a big slice of the entire population.
Right.
If they're not killing people over here and only killing these people, while the other one is killing the whole spectrum, what is going to kill more people? I mean, you don't have to be an epidemiologist to figure that out. It is going to kill less people.
Right. Hey, we see Peg has come up.
Peg has appeared.
Peg, would you like to go ahead and talk? Hey, welcome to the show. You're from this is Peg from Boulder, right?
I am from Boulder.
All right. What's on your mind?
Oh, what's on my mind? Hi, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Ben's a buddy of mine. We run a website called mycoloradogop.org.
That's right.
And Anil and I put together an article last night. We thought that people in Colorado ought to know that the GOP changed the bylaws this morning. And
okay,
we just wanted people to be aware.
Okay.
And what do you think of those bylaw changes? I mean, I brought it up to Patrick Neville and said, no, you're misinforming people,
but...
and that this is not a, this is to save the caucus system and it's not to empower the already empowered, but I don't know.
What do you think?
Well, I'm trying to be nice. I have a lot of friends on the SEC and on the executive committee. I just think that we're too used to letting the GOP do whatever they want, and we've got to get over that.
Well, particularly because that's just take a look at their record, right? The establishment GOP, we have lost forever. We lost in the last election by, I mean, you know, you have to go back to the, you know, prehistoric times to find a worse defeat, right? So I'd be one hand saying, well, you know, maybe we need to listen to them. They get it right. But they don't, I mean, we could lose nothing. We could have a bunch of fourth graders design our bylaws for us and we couldn't do any worse.
Well, it just is sad to me that the people of the State Central Committee, well, of the Executive Committee, they don't even feel like they need to let Republicans throughout the state know what's going on. The caucuses never got put on the State Central Committee meetings website. They never got on the GOP website. Their calendar, they had some other things on there that were really good, and they did some teaching classes and things like that, but it wasn't even on the calendar. I talked to people on Sunday who said, oh, the caucuses were yesterday? I didn't know.
We had a guy at our caucus meeting, Peg, say the same thing. He said, it took me forever to figure out. And it was kind of funny. He said, why do they not make it easier? And you were like, well, that's a really good
question. They don't want it easier. They really have been trying to kill the caucus for a long time. And we can see what's happened. The people have forgotten that it's their government. And that's why we called it My Colorado GOP, because it is mine. Whoever says it, it is yours if you're a Republican. It is your GOP. You are responsible for electing the people who nominate the candidates or delegate the candidates. And it's going to be different this year, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hopefully.
New and improved, I'm sure.
No.
Sure. That things are all right. So one more time, what's the name of the website? Because people, and what will people find when they go there?
Well, right now they'll find the bylaws and Neil's suggestions on how to vote for them. And just recently, we've had a lot of information about the caucuses, and the plan is now. I'm getting up. There's the card, mycoloradogop.org. You can also go to governmentofthepeople.us, and you will get there also. So. Yeah, there's a lot of information on the caucus. I've gone through and put the six purposes of the GOP from what I can tell from reading the bylaws and the history of the United States and having been involved with the GOP for a while. So it's a lot of information. There's a glossary of technical terms or political terms. So when people say SCC and EC, you know, what does that all mean? So it's helpful. And Ben and I and the others, Jimmy Mack and Anil, we'll put on there. Huh?
You're the rebels. So
No, we're practical Americans and we're trying.
There you go.
Same thing.
All right, Peg, thank you for that information. MyColoradoGOP.org. And, you know, if you haven't listened to our show before, I think real quickly here, because we only have a couple minutes. One of the reasons we like to talk about this and we like to talk about grassroots is because in this day and age, there is so much big money, big donors, just big guys and deep state kind of guys who capture the parties and they get their way. And I think if people don't fight up, don't stand up constantly, right, and say, no, wait a minute, let's go back to the rules. This is who we are. This is what we are. It's easy to just get trampled.
you're going to get trampled anyway, but it's better to know you're getting trampled.
at least you will know you're getting
trampled. You're being trampled.
At least you know
like
you're
these bylaws,
trampled.
You may find, hey, we're getting trampled. We're getting okay.
Trampled.
All right.
Be curious to see if you don't go and I go as an alternate and they try to say you can't come in.
You know,
yeah. Well, that'd be hard as a delegate. I'm going.
That's right. Chuck Barney will know.
Yeah.
No, Julie, okay. You know, she's nice.
All right. Hey, listen, guys, this is going to wrap it up for us. We want to say thank you to
everybody
today, to Patrick Neville. Thank you to Ben, Casper, Jeff Allen. It's been a great show.
It's been good.
If you missed it, you can go to and catch all of our podcasts at chuckandjulie.com.
Just remember, this is Party Friday, even though there's not a single place you can go.
But they can
But you can order drinks from your restaurant and get zappoed, and you can get stoned because the marijuana ones are open. So, you know, it's not hopeless. It's not hopeless.
Hey, the show today brought to you thanks to Colorado Citizen Press. ColoradoCitizenPress.com. Go ahead and check them out, too. And once again, thank you to the BBS folks. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time.